sometimes it might be. Thank you for getting to another episode of the Chovo Show podcast here on Spawnport.com. I'm your host, JG Smooth. And you know, you might notice I did bust out the It Was a Good Day intro, which means that if you listened to last week's episode, then you know what occurred this past Saturday for me to bust out the alternative intro music. But before I jump into that, those of you who were not tuned in to last week's episode of Chovo Show podcast, I have huge breaking news. The UCO women's soccer team has just won, literally 5 minutes ago, just won the MIAA conference tournament with a dominating 6-1 win over defending national champion Central Missouri. So Lady Broncos now go to 20-1 on the season, and I guess we'll await the start of the NCAA tournament for their quest at a national championship. As I mentioned numerous times on this podcast before, the ladies are just dominant on the soccer field. Case in point today, it was 5-1 at the half. So they did not mess around. They went there, got the job done. And so congratulations to a special bunch of Lady Broncos here, clinching not only a regular season conference championship, but now a tournament conference championship. So huge news there out of UCO soccer. So congratulations and keep up the good work. This Friday, the basketball teams tip off. They tip off is a crossover tournament. They will take on, I believe it is Northwestern State, Friday. That is on the road. So that both men and women's will be in action. And on top of that, the basketball previews, as you know, again, if you had listened last week, I had said there are going to be two podcasts this week that are still going to hold firm. Now, the basketball one that I said might be this week will be pushed back to next week because my plans for a senior night special right now are on track to happen. So when that does become complete, I will for sure let you all know. I'm not going to tell you this time what it is, but just know that I think you all will really enjoy it. It will be with somebody near and dear to my heart that I have mentioned on this podcast. So you want to take a gander at who it might be, feel free to do so. I'm looking forward to this, and I'm hoping that you all are too. I'm gonna try to have it out as soon as possible. But definitely no later than Friday evening. That is the latest I can do this here, just for time's sake. So be on the lookout for that. It'll be another Chovo special. So we've already had, this will be the second one in as many weeks. So hey, that's good. I cannot stress you all enough here how blown away I am, how my man Anna Francisco is. And by the way, I want to give a shout out to my man Anna Francisco here. Was a Next Gen Under 30 award recipient. So my man Anna Francisco, also known as Suave, shout out, man. Hey, props, my man, props. Because if you do not know, Suave is the man who site I use for the podcast and the Cowboys reports. So shout out to him, because you know, without his site, this might be possible, and it's good to see his hard work pay off. Now, with that out of the way, if you didn't listen to last week's episode, you missed a lot. But if you did not listen, missed last week's episode, I said if the Broncos were to somehow get a third straight shutout, that would definitely warrant It Was a Good Day intro, and they got a third straight shutout. So, a dominating win. You know, last week I mentioned how the Missouri Southern game was not the best effort. It started off similar to that. It was 7-0 at the end of the first quarter. You kind of disappointed in that, but they turned it around and proceeded to score 55 points, again, 55 points over the last three quarters, to beat rival Northeastern State 62-0 on the road for the fifth straight President's Cup. So for the fifth year in a row now, the cup will stay where it belongs, in Edmond. This marks, as I mentioned, this marks the third straight shutout. This is the first time that the Broncos have posted three straight shutouts since 1979, and only the second time since 1942. So, the defensive coordinator, Russ Pickett, my man, a great job here on the defensive side of the ball. I've seen the energy here. They're flying around. They're causing havoc here. And, you know, it had definitely, you can tell a difference from that Kearney game to Dallas. They're a completely different defense, and they have flexed their muscles here the past 3 weeks, posting back-to-back-to-back shutouts. This is their 15th straight win in the President's Cup. Not 15th straight. This is their 15th... this is the fifth straight win in the rivalry, and this is the second largest win in the history of the rivalry, as date back to 1915, which is actually the biggest margin of defeat when UCO won that game 83-0. So you know, last year I believe UCO scored 63 points, but surrendered 3 touchdowns. This year they scored 1 point less and surrendered no touchdowns. So hey, progress was made. So, you know, I mentioned the defense here. They forced, they forced 3 turnovers. The special teams technically forced a turnover. It was one of those, actually, where I did not see it because I watched it on the webcast, but I went to go get some food. And when I came back, I noticed there was 42 points on the board, and I had no idea what happened, but my dad was watching it and informed me that after UCO scored quickly into the half, that on the kickoff, for some reason, Northeastern State did not field the kick. They let it bounce, and Colton Lindsay, who had one interception, one of the three interceptions on the day, recovered that. I wish I would have seen that play, because I'd like to see what the return man was thinking on that, but it is what it is. But Colton Lindsay had one pick, recovered fumble, and he returned his interception 24 yards for a touchdown. So Colton Lindsay, you know, last week he had that interception on an opening drive against Missouri Southern, and then had that forced fumble. Excuse me, had that forced fumble that resulted in a O'Shea Harris 70-yard from recovery for touchdown. Speaking of Mr. O'Shea Harris also had an interception in this game, along with Kobe Underwood, who has come along nicely here after a rough start. And another guy that got off to a really fast start here is Mecale Hall. And Mecale Hall is a guy that, again, I have continued to give credit for and credit to here. I was critical of Mecale Hall, as I mentioned a number of times on the podcast beforehand, because I had been told of the great potential of Mr. Hall, and he was not living up to it. I believe he had 3 catches in the first 4 games, something like that. It was not great stats, but then he had that a decent game against Lindenwood, and he seemed to have turned the corner. I know Bobek has said numerous times here that he credits the turnaround to his practice habits. Whatever it is, I'm glad it's happening here, because Mecale Hall, in the first quarter alone, had 3 catches for 112 yards. And a touchdown that came on a 66-yard touchdown pass. But again, in the first quarter alone, on 3 catches, he had 112 yards receiving. It definitely was a dominating performance there from him. In the first quarter, it was on that first drive, was the Mecale Hall show. Literally, it was the Mecale Hall show. And again, you know, this is a guy here. I mentioned before, Mecale Hall, just another guy, another weapon here that has stepped up in the absence of Lelia Curry. You know, Lelia Curry now with his shoulder injuries out for the season. The main man had been Dustin Boskus, but of late, it has been Mecale Hall. Dustin Boskus actually had a quiet day, finishing with just 4 catches for 36 yards. But you know, when you have, you know, a guy like Mecale Hall here finishing his day with 6 catches and 2 touchdowns, but had 200 yards and 33.3 yards a catch, that's definitely going to divert the attention there of your quarterback. Your Will Collins here, who finished with 278 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. That was a very poor throw. He forced into coverage there in the in scoring range, actually. Not that it would have mattered in this game, but you know, you don't want to see red zone turnovers. But he had a solid day. And then the sad part here is which is good because it segues into the next group I want to discuss here. In the second half, did not really pass the ball. You know, they really ran it the whole time. In the first half, Clay McKenzie was the main back here. He had 22 carries for 86 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 3.9 yards a carry. And then my man Sabor Daniels, just a guy that I like. I couldn't tell you why I like Sabor Daniels. There's something about Sabor Daniels that I just like. And Sabor Daniels actually beat Justin Curry off the bench in the game. He was the second back. And Sabor Daniels was taking full on advantage of that. He had 10 carries for 37 yards. Was close again to getting a touchdown. As I mentioned last week, he was close to getting a touchdown, and it took him out the game. They put in McKenzie. But this week, he was close, and then that's when tragedy struck here for Sabor. He got bent back in ways we're not supposed to bend. They had to pretty much carry him off the field. He put no weight on one of his legs. I think it was the right leg. Put no weight on it, and it's not looking good for Sabor Daniels, which is unfortunate because Sabor Daniels is a guy here, made a position switch coming out of East Central, and then played some this year. And then when he did play again, it showed some promise there. Was making all of his carries count, was having a great drive up to that point, and then unfortunately suffers. But I'm going to go on a limb here and say it's probably a season-ending injury. So thoughts and prayers out there to Sabor Daniels. I hope he has a speedy recovery here, because Sabor is a very promising back that I would like to think here, especially if he can recover from that injury, have a good spring, will be in line not only for carries, but that starting job here again. Say, McKenzie is a senior, and Sabor Daniels, they beat Curry off the bench Saturday. So I'm just saying here, Sabor Daniels, a talented back in his own right. Now he will be pushed because I mentioned last week, they brought in several quality backs last year, including Peyton Scott, the Oklahoma Gatorade Player of the Year last year out of Sand Springs, and Tucker Pauley, a very good back, I believe a 2 or 3 time state champion from Bigsby. So we'll still have competition there. They also have Bruce White back. I believe Bruce White has about injuries too this season. I remember now, Bruce White was a former walk-on also from East Central who proceeded to step up when all the backs were hurt, saving Sabor Daniels' red shirt and going off, having a couple of 100 yard games down the stretch there. So the backfield is still in good hands. Now, that being said, after the Sabor Daniels injury, they went with Clay McKenzie for the rest of the half. The second half, Clay McKenzie did not play. I was not surprised about that. So Justin Curry, at that point, by default, got in the game. Now, to Curry's credit here, he did not let the opportunity go to waste, because in the second half, on 18 carries, he had 157 yards, 3 touchdowns on 8.7 yards carry. So, including a long of 46 that he broke for a touchdown in the fourth quarter. Justin Curry, this guy's good. My dad's pointed out that he definitely is probably one of the quicker backs that we have. Clay McKenzie, again, is your downhill rusher here. Curry is more your speed guy. That's always good. You go three deep, but they're all, in my opinion, at least, quality running backs. But Curry pretty much was the offense there in the second half, because again they did not pass much. They actually pulled Will Collins, I believe it was midway through the third. I was kind of surprised because I did not know the status of Chandler Garrett. Now they did bring in Chandler Garrett. He did not do anything but hand off. They did not attempt any more passes. They just handed it off. So Chandler. So I don't know how healthy Chandler Garrett is. I'm assuming not too healthy because they did not run or throw him. They just had him hand the ball off. That was interesting because I was curious to see how that was going to work. And then another note here, true freshman H-back Isaiah Jackson, I believe out of Broken Arrow, was a guy I was surprised that they were playing this year because they have Dante McGee, Daxton Williams, and Michael Tolson. All back there at H-back. Now, I know Caleb Moss was the H-back last year. He has since graduated. But they had three other H-backs, and I was surprised that they played him. They brought in two. They brought him, and they brought in a guy from Westmore. And I was surprised that they played him. But I see why, because the guy is a really good blocker. I believe he's not ultra big yet. I'm assuming once he hits the weights, the office in here, he will gain some. I believe he's playing right now around 210 pounds, but he did make his first touchdown catch on a 5-yard touchdown. They had him blocked for a second, and then he kind of slipped out of the backfield, and Will Collins found him and got the touchdown. So congratulations to Isaiah Jackson there on your first career touchdown. It was definitely a great day. For UCF football, for sure. They came out there. They definitely played 100% better than they played against Missouri Southern. The running game had 303 yards. UCF finished the day with 581 yards, 5-7 in the red zone, 25 first downs, and 8-15 on third downs. The I would say the one area of concern for me is the kicking, because Alex Covedo, usually a reliable kicker, missed a easy field goal from, I know it was inside 30 yards, and then also missed the extra point. That was the one concern I had, because it could have been 66 excuse me, to nothing, instead of 63. It is what it is. But again, an all around solid win. The defense dominated the game here. Northeastern State only had 8 first downs, only 40 passing yards, 4-15 on third downs, and made 0 trips into the red zone. So, that's real impressive numbers. Really impressive numbers. Defensively, it's just all around solid effort. No one really stuck out to me except for the guy I'm gonna call KK, because I do not want to butcher his name. I just do not want to butcher this man's name. But he's a defensive tackle. He's a JUCO, I believe, from Garden City. Made his presence felt. Now the man only had 5 tackles, 2 for loss, and 1 sack. But the man pressured that pocket like you would not believe. Since Mike Rios left in that Northwest Missouri State game with the knee injury, the middle wall has been solid. The push hasn't been there, but in yesterday's game, Saturday's game, the push was there, and I do want to make sure that I give him some credit there, because he really did push that pocket right there. Definitely forced some of those bad throws that the quarterback made for Northeastern, and was a key part of getting the shutout. So looking forward now, after 3 dominating performances, they now face a team here in Emporia State on senior night. That is 6-4. They're coming off of their own senior night win, a 48-0 win over Missouri Southern. So back to playing the Missouri Southern peoples again, like always, because it seems to be how this works. It seems like the team we played following week always plays Missouri Southern the week before. Now, I did notice while looking at the stats here, it was 0-0 after the first quarter, which was surprising, because on the season, Emporia outscoring their opponents in the first quarter 54-41. So to see not only 0-0, but against Missouri Southern here, was definitely interesting to me. But they did, score 48 straight points there from quarters 2-4. Security win, had 627 yards of offense. They had, now a stat that I found extremely staggering here. They had 9 kickoffs for 487 yards, which is literally almost which is double, almost three times the amount that Missouri Southern had of total offense, which was 177. So that is your fun fact for the day. You know, that says a lot. I think more about Missouri Southern than it does Emporia here, but. Emporia though, again, 6-4. Now, this is a team here I need to more time too, because some teams lost, actually. Northwest Missouri lost to, I believe it was, they lost, and Pitt State lost. Now, I don't know where that puts UCO in the standings currently, because while we own the tiebreaker over over Northern Missouri State, we do not own it over Pitt State. So I'm not exactly sure how it's going to go, because the team that beat Northwest Missouri State, Fort Hays State, also has beaten UCO. So I believe, according to the Northeastern State commentators, currently there is a three-way tie atop the standings here in the MIAA. So it's going to be interesting to see here how that plays out. Now, what does this mean for UCO here? I would like to think with yesterday's win, now that they are at win number 7 on the season, they would at least have clinched another bowl, which is good. Now, you know, naturally here, if you beat Emporia, I would assume you would all but guarantee it. Now, I'm not sure what would happen for UCO to move up into third place. I would assume they would have to win, and a couple of teams would have to lose. I will try to find more out about that, and then when I make the special, the total special, I will put an update about this in that, because I do want you all to know what the postseason is looking like here as far as Bronco football goes. Looking at Emporia again, 6-4. Now this is a team here that is probably fighting for a chance at a bowl spot. So this is not going to be a pushover game like the past 2 weeks have been. I would definitely expect some points scored by Emporia this week. I hate to say that. As much as I would like to see a 4-0 game shutout, I don't know what's going to happen this week. When looking at the stats, they're coming in averaging 28.7 points per game. They're giving up 26.7. So, you know, it's right around an even matchup here. They come in averaging 167 yards on the ground, 4 yards of carry, 250 passing yards, with 22 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. Now, where they lack is on third downs, they are completing only 36%. And then on field goals, they are 2 of 5 with a long of 30. And that is with using 2 kickers. So that to me right there are 2 areas that is in UCO's favor right now, because they are allowing, Emporia is allowing 43% third down conversion percentage here. So just 7% higher than what they're converting. So to me, that is definitely an area. We mentioned keys of the game. I know I usually do it later, but and I have to address it now. It's kind of right in front of me here. That winning a third down battle, well, it's just key in every game, but I think what especially is key here, as is winning the second. In the second and fourth quarter, because looking at the score by quarter, as I mentioned a minute ago here, Emporia usually outscores the points in the first quarter 54-41, but in the second quarter, it's where UCO can do some damage here, because Emporia has been outscored 106-74. So that to me is definitely the quarter here where UCO wants to make the move, because just like Northeastern in the first quarter, UCO did not take advantage of that by only scoring 7 points. Now, they were able to obviously get past that because of who they're playing. But this week, I think it's going to be imperative here, especially with a lot on the line here for both teams, that they come out there and do that. Now, in the third quarter, Emporia's outscoring opponents 84-40. But in the fourth, they're getting outscored 77-69 here. So if you're basing off of the score by quarter here, you like to think UCO, you want to keep close there in the first. Well, now naturally you want to obviously be ahead every time in the game, but going in, you want to say, you know, if we can keep it close within a score in the first, make a move in the second, okay, try to get a couple of scores of lead because Emporia seems to come out of the locker room strong in third quarters. And then in the fourth, again, just close the show out. Now, that sounds easy, but we know this UCO team has been highly inconsistent this season. If you take away the three games against Washburn, Missouri Southern, and and Northeastern, you know, you have a really inconsistent ball club. Now, this three-game stretch here is great in many ways. One, their wins. One, their wins. Two, their confidence-boosting wins here because you got three shutouts. Thirdly here, passing stats. It definitely passed stature, especially as far as the ground game goes. The ground game has struggled here. So you had a nice three-game stretch here where hopefully some confidence was built because they have now won five straight games. So you would like to think here the confidence going in, especially seeing that there's a strong group of seniors here, especially on that defense. I'm sure will want to walk out of Wild Stadium with a win in their last game. I would like to think here they will come out there energized and ready to play. Now looking at Emporia's roster, now if you do not know much about Emporia, they are in Kansas, Emporia, Kansas, and they recruit a lot of Oklahoma kids. So I'm gonna read off some names here of some of their key players, and you can notice some Oklahoma natives in this among their key players. So offensively here, the quarterback, Braxton Marstall, 6'2", 207-pound senior, is not an Oklahoma native, but has thrown for 2,428 yards, 21 touchdowns, 6 picks, and 61% completion percentage. Throwing 242.8 yards a game, and also the second leading rusher on the team with 358 yards and 8 touchdowns. So we have another dual threat quarterback here. Joe has actually done well defending those, especially against Washburn. Did a heck of a job actually defending the quarterback run there. So And they did go against Pitt. The only time that struggled was when they played Curry. They really struggled against Curry, but I think that was also one of their weaker efforts as a whole. But since that game, the quarterback runs have just not really been there for teams. Now they do have a backfield with two Oklahoma natives. The first one here is Landon Nault from Kingfisher, 5'9", 193-pound senior, is their leading rusher on the season with 850 yards, 7 touchdowns, and 4.7 yards a carry. It's also their third leading receiver as far as yards go here, with 36 catches for 225 yards and 1 touchdown at 6.2 yards a catch. So Landon Nault, their threat on the ground and to the air. And then the other back is Ty Collins from Guthrie, 5'10", 193-pound junior on the season, has 265 yards and 1 touchdown on 4.4 yards per carry. So another nice backfield there. Two quality backs, two Oklahoma backs. I like to think here, UCO now you're going to have to defend the run now, unlike teams like Kearney and Penn State here and Washburn for all intents and purposes here. Emporia can't throw the ball and throw the ball well because they have two receivers here. One, Justin Brown, a 6'2", 193-pound senior from El Reno, is leading receiver in terms of catches. He's second in yards with 59 catches for 623 yards, 4 touchdowns, averaging 10.6 yards a catch. And then you got Tyler Harris, who also doubles as their punter. 6'2", 188-pound senior, 50 catches for 627 yards and 10 touchdowns, averaging 12.5 yards a catch. So you have two receivers here, both at least 6'2", that have combined for 14 touchdowns. Okay, so the receiving threat is there. The receiving threat is there, which has not been there in the past couple of weeks. Outside of Brianna Hopp from Washburn, who is one of the better receivers in the conference. you know, the past two games, the receiving threats have not been there. Let's just be honest here. It's not been there. But they're back this week here. There's two solid receivers here. And they're going to have to keep an eye on. And then a third receiver here, Jordan Reed, another senior from Edmond. So, you know that from, I believe he's from Memorial. So, you know he's going to probably come out there inspired to play some inspired football. He's chased for 165, has 31 catches for 329 yards and 5 touchdowns at 10.6 yards catches. So top three receivers here have 19 touchdowns. That is no slouch numbers. Those are solid numbers right there from any receiving core at any level. So you're gonna have to keep an eye on that. Now defensively, Emporia is led by three solid linebackers. Jace McDown, what a great name. Jace McDown, 6 foot, 215 pounds, sophomore, easy leading tackler, at 106, 11 for loss, 2.5 sacks and a pick. Then you have Gary Woods, the second from Cassidy, so another Oklahoma kid right there. 6'6", 189, has 64 tackles, 5 for loss, 1 sack, and a fumble recovery. And then Logan Thompson, 6'3", 230 pound K-State transfer as a senior, has 61 tackles, 7 for loss, and 1 pick. And then their sack leader here is defensive end Parker Bass, 6'2", 228 pound junior, has 5 sacks, 10 for loss, 10 tackles for loss, 3 fumble recoveries, and 2 forced fumbles. So definitely there, Tyler Bass is a guy along the line. And I failed to mention this earlier in the podcast, but I believe it was Noah Hammonds. Noah Hammonds struggled, especially early in that game against Northeastern State. There were times there when Noah Hammonds was indeed beat. And I know Noah Hammonds is a quality tackle. Noah Hammonds is a guy that I know has been at least been a 3-year starter here. Is also a senior. Now, you know, everybody has a bad game, so I'm not going to hold out against Noah. I know Noah is a quality tackle. Noah has been getting done here all season long. Would expect nothing less out of Noah. So I'm going to run that down as just he had a bad game. But that still is Parker Bass is definitely better than anybody that Northeastern State trotted out there, to say the least. Now, as far as special teams go, they have two block kicks on the season. So much like Northeastern State, I believe, had blocked 3 kicks on the season here. Emporia is right behind them at 2. So again, it'll be crucial here that the special teams make sure they hold their blocks. We do not want any block kicks at all, because this could very well be a close game where every point will probably matter. Now, I mentioned their kicking woes early on here, where they had 2-5 on field goals. Their main kicker is Sam Dobbins here, a redshirt freshman who was 2-4 with a long of 30. And then the other kicker, Gary Schoonover, another rookie name, Clark Schoonover, True Frost, is 0-1. So kicking right now, not their strength, which could explain why they are 66% on fourth down. I would like to think that Emporia, especially if they're on their own side of the 50, will be going forward more times than not. Now, when they do punt the ball, however, again, I mentioned that Tyler Harris, the receiver here, also doubles as the punter. Averaged 39 yards a punt, along with 73, 3 touchbacks, 11 down inside the 20, and 7 of 50 or more. Now, that also brings into account the possibility of fakes. Okay, so Tyler Holland has done an exceptional job this season on special teams. We'll need to definitely bring the A game here again this week because of the fact that the two punters, Harris and then Marshall, the quarterback, also has punted the ball a couple of times this season as well. So the you know the when you if you pair that with the lack of a kicking game and the fact that you have two offensive players here that are punters, definitely can go with some fakes. I remember my first ever OU football game I went to was against Utah State back in 2007. And Utah State had a quarterback by the name of Leon Jackson III, and he was also the punter. And I remember seeing that, and I'm like, oh, I didn't know quarterbacks punted the ball. And they did fake the punt twice, and then converted one time on a fake punt pass because the quarterback is indeed the punter. So just be on the lookout for that here. Just be aware that that is a very possibility here that could affect the game. So special teams to me is the ultimate key this week, along with the ones that I mentioned earlier here about winning the second and fourth quarters, and then continuing to try to get the ground game going here. So they can hopefully send these seniors out with a win. You know, last year's senior night was a dominating win, 20-point win over then 24th ranked Chisholm, Missouri. They won that game 48-28. That game was you had a lot of program guys there, a lot of all time greats. Played last game at Wallace Stadium. Guys like Chad Stallard, KT Looper, Josh Crockett, a lot of guys have meant a lot to the program. And you still have those guys, you know, this year. You got Clay McKenzie, you know, stat-wise, one of the best backs in school history. You know, I'm sure it's going to be emotional for him. You got guys like Noah Hammonds, on defense. You got, you know, Colton Lindsay has been a mainstay this season. Langston Underwood, you know, former walk on, that earned a scholarship in the spring, has made a good impact this year. Alex Figueroa here, who has a chance at the next level. Malik Walker, apparently another walk on from Spyro there, a guy that has been a nice presence. So you got some guys back there, up front, Justin Stewart, you know, a very good end, he will also be playing his last home game, as will two of my friends in the MassCom program here, in Eli Hooks and Trey Warmington, will also be playing their last game. So, you know, there will definitely be I don't see emotions, but I will say that compared to last year, I do feel more involved this year in this year's team. So, you know, it might be a little bit tough. I would say after the game, just knowing that that's it, really. But that being said, you know, I hope that they can go out with a win here. I would like to see that happen there. So they can always remember that they won their last home game. That was always important for me, to see seniors at least win their last home game, because I thought that's something that you would carry with you for the rest of your life. You can look back fondly, you know, on that. But that being said, since it is a home game, we will have, for the first time in like 3 weeks, we will have sound bites. We will have the press conference from Nick Bobek following the game. I will do my best. Again, I will try here to do my best. If I run into any other players besides the one that I plan to talk to for the special, that are seniors here, if I'm able to run into any of them walking to the press conference, from the press conference, I will for sure, try to get some thoughts from them to share with you all. Because, you know, I always want to make, any way I can make this podcast more involved, I will do so, because I think it is important here for you to be able to kind of get to know the people who I mention, you know, every podcast. So I will try my best to do that. But we will have sound bites. We'll have the press conference. So kickoff 2:00. I know it's bedlam. I understand that. I understand it's bedlam. But you know, if you have not yet made it to a UCL football game, this is your last chance for the season. So if you have not, I strongly encourage you to come down to Edmond, to come down to Walton Stadium. It's senior night. It's going to be a blast. It's going to be fun. I'm going to be seeing guys play with some emotion here. This is a key game for both teams to guarantee to see some good football. I encourage you to come out there. Watch local talent on both sides of the ball now. On both sides of the ball. So I'm telling you, if you are an Oklahoma high school fan, I know there's some out there right now. If you are that, come to this game, because there's plenty of talent on both sides of the ball. That are Oklahoma grown kids here, local kids, great talent on both sides of the ball. And I definitely encourage you all, you know, not to come check them out. Kickoff again, 2:00 p.m. at Walton Stadium. So that's what we can do it for the first episode of this week's two-parter. Again, we'll have the senior night special sometime to you this week. Again, I'm not going to tell you who it is. I want it to be a surprise. I told you last time because it was so big, we had to announce that. I would definitely keep an eye out for that to come within the upcoming days. So, again, my name is JG Smooth, and I'll talk to you all later.
Bye. Have a beautiful time.